I'm Hannah Kofitman.
I'm Catherine Orchard.
And I'm Hannah van der Vesthuizen.
And we are the Fuckboy Podcast.
I cannot wait to be back together, so that's going to be seamless.
It's like,
at the moment, it's like we've been on remix for however many weeks.
Remix.
I have strong regrets doing that. We've just been like chatting off the mic, and then now I'm like, oh, people can hear this.
Yeah, they can hear this one.
Censor. Yeah. Don't be yourself.
There is so little censoring going on in this podcast.
Like, yeah. You'd be surprised.
Oh, really? Explicit really? Content in Hanako Footman's mind that we are not privy to.
It's all just filth in here.
How are we?
Yeah, all right. Not bad.
I'm tired. Yeah. Shocker.
Just shocker.
Perpetually tired.
Yeah. I'm also a bit hungover though, so I did this to myself, guys.
Nice.
I'm just really bad at sleeping. As soon as I have one drink, I can't.
That's a thing, right?
Sleep.
Yeah. It's a stimulant.
Yeah.
Ew.
So basically, should be drinking less, but instead have decided to do the opposite.
Naturally.
Very British, I feel.
Yeah. What were you drinking last night?
Pints.
Nice.
Guinness, obviously. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I cannot abide a pint.
I don't like pints either.
I love it. The volume of liquid is, you know, you get so much bang for your buck.
I find a pint overwhelming. I like a half pint.
A half pint is manageable.
Yeah, and then it doesn't go warm. Do it like the French. Half pint doesn't go warm.
I do also really love, and I hate to say it, but I do love the aesthetic of women drinking pints. I'm just like...
Yeah.
I'm into it.
I get it.
I think it's fit, basically, it's fit. Which is probably what
sure. the rock is trying to be fit.
I also think the aesthetic of women drinking red wine and drinking like Kath, when you get like a little thing of whiskey or something. I'm like, that's so cool and fit.
Oh yeah, love a bit of whiskey. What's your favourite whiskey, Kath?
So I'm not well versed in whiskey.
Okay.
I just drink it.
Yeah. You'll take anything.
But I'd like to become versed. Mm-hmm. I think I got into whiskey through brandy.
Oh, okay.
And I love a Courvoisier. Is that what it is? Very old lady.
Courvoisier, yeah.
I can't believe that because it's so bad. That is the
brandy.
Worst tasting.
Brandy?
Yeah.
Oh, I love brandy.
My dad used to drink brandy. And I think I remember when I was a kid, like lifting the lid off the bottle and... feeling drunk from smelling it because it's so strong.
Oh, do you guys remember the first time you got drunk?
Yeah, I do
that
actually.
Obviously, I don't.
Cal's memory is atrocious.
No idea.
How old were you and where were you? Yeah, I remember vividly. Yeah.
How do you remember these things?
I've got a quite dodgy memory, but the memories that I do have really stick in my mind because I'm very visual, so it really fucking sticks in the old noggin. And I was really young, maybe like 6 or 7, and my dad would always have a tall can of beer after work after he closed up his shop. So a tall can of like cheap German beer.
Love it.
And we lived above my dad's shop. My dad owned a cafe at the time called Samuel Johnson's in Wimbledon. And he would always, like, that was his unwind in the evening at like 8 p.m. And he'd listen to the Archers and have a tall can of German beer and sit on his stool.
Your dad is such a soft boy.
Such a soft boy. And he used to let me sip his beer. And one time he was out the room and I loved beer as a child. I thought it was the most delicious thing. And I just fucking downed like a whole glass and it hit me like a fucking four-wheel bus. As opposed to three. And I was stumbling all over my dad's shop. I have a vivid memory of stumbling. Did you tell your dad? Into the table. No.
Did he realise, do you think?
I don't think so. No, I think I did some stumbling. I was like a drunk giraffe for a little bit in the shop and then just like hid upstairs because like, oh my God, I'm extremely inebriated right now. I need a little sleep.
And you knew that that was naughty. You knew that you weren't allowed to do that.
I knew that I took it too far. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just the one sip that I was allowed and I took more than several.
I bet your dad came back and was like, wait,
where
what?
The fuck did it go?
<He's> drunk on. So the first time I remember is stealing from my parents' like alcohol cupboard, which I think is much more standard than your experience. Standard.
Yeah,
probably was your memory as well, Kath, if you could remember it.
If I could remember it, that would be it.
Yeah. But just being like, oh my God, this is so exciting. I feel so grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that like the local kids club, maybe, what, like, you know those like
like a town hall,
like a church?
No, it was kind of similar to what it was called. Heatham House. Did you guys ever go to Heatham House?
No.
It was like, it's like a little, I guess they would sort of put on gigs for everyone who was under 18, and everyone would just like go and watch and then stand outside and people would just be drunk.
Yes.
So Heatham House
something.
Heatham House Youth Centre. That's so hard Youth Centre. Heatham House Youth Centre.
Say that three times after drinking a tall can of German beer.
Oh, it's quite a spooky building, actually, isn't
it's
it?
It's a really spooky building.
Ooh.
Speaking of spooky buildings, I did already kind of talk about this, but I feel we must discuss Jennifer's Body.
It's just such
rewatch
a hot
that. Thing. Oh, it's
yeah,
so
I haven't
thin.
Seen it in years. Can I remember a thing apart from?
I will say
luscious lips.
That objectively, so many of the lines that they have to say are awful. They are so cringy and they're that like 90s thing where they wouldn't be like, oh, that sounds absolutely brilliant. They'll be like, that sounds absolute brill. Like all of those sort of like really cringy
basically
little,
how we talk on
basically
this
how we talk.
Yeah, but like it's like having to sell it as like you're like the really hot girl in school and you actually speak like this and blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the acting is so good.
Mm,
Amanda Seyfried and Megan Fox, they fucking act in that film.
Shit, really I need good. To watch it again.
I and need to watch it again. So I've not fit. Seen it in a while. They're so fit.
It's
really having a renaissance, isn't it, Jennifer's Body?
I think because Megan Fox is having a renaissance.
Yeah.
There we are.
And it's also like one of those like gay ass films that's not actually that gay.
Well, it's interesting
like
because I guess it's that thing of being like, when we all watched it, there was a weird point in the 90s where everyone was just a bit queer. It felt like everyone was like...
everyone was just a bit gay.
Well, as in like that, but it wasn't like a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it wasn't
yeah.
It was a bit like Mean Girls, which...
Well, like how like Madonna
noughties.
And Britney
And everyone was sort of like, everyone was being a bit bi and like everyone was just, no one was really talking about it. It just felt accepted. And then it sort of went back to being like, that's really controversial, or it's such a big thing. If there's a queer storyline, that's what the storyline will be. It will be about queerness, like very. Whereas Jennifer's Body is, there's queerness in it, but it's not about queerness. It's like a horror film.
It's quite explicitly in it. It's not implied.
Yeah.
It's just there. I just remember watching it when I was younger and being like scared and excited and like. Oh my God.
Well, I was talking with some
feelings.
I was talking with two friends of mine last night, both of which are gay women, and we were saying like how did you know you were queer? And they were like, because you just want to spend all your time around your like female friend for some reason. Just really want to tickle them, just really want to spend my time with them. I was like,
tickle
yes. It's so fucking true though, where you're like, I feel like no one else wants to hang out with me as much as I want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Weird that. But similar vibe in Jennifer's Body, I guess.
Yeah, it's like that thing when you're a kid and you really like the cartoon character.
Yeah.
You're like, really like them. And you're like obsessed with them and you just like really like this cartoon character. And you're like a bit coy about it and you're like in love with them.
And it's like practicing for having your real crush. your first real crush. But that's also a thing that women do for sure. Like, you practice romantic relationships with your female friends when you're in school before. Expand. Like, as in you, there's so many girlfriends of mine who have had really long-term monogamous relationships with men in their adult lives that also had really long-term monogamous like almost feels like monogamous relationships with female friends in high school.
Like, that's seems so interesting.
I only had female friends because I went to an all-girls school from the age of 4 to 18. So, like, the idea of having male friendship in my life, I'm like, what is that?
Imagine.
Yeah, I actually really struggle to have male friends. I find it a lot easier to be friends with women, with females.
With the females.
With the females, yeah. I'm just not used to it.
But you do have a healthy dose of male in your life because you've got a long-term male partner. So, you know, you'll be having that element in your life.
Yeah, but it involves sex.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Can you imagine? It would be nice to have a relationship with the opposite sex that doesn't involve sex.
Yeah.
Or any kind of, you know.
Yeah. I think
any kind of energy like that. I always feel like, oh, I wish.
Well, you do have that with people from class, like from Hanako and I have gone to the same drama class, and I think you do have that. I have that with some male actor friends of mine, but it's, I would say, harder with the people who I knew since I was like in high school because
different dynamic.
Well, also because you're all being like, oh my God, sex is on the cards for the first time in your life. Like, everyone's looking at it through a sort of like hormone-driven sexual gaze. Whereas when you get older and you meet people professionally and you're like, I'm not going to have sex with you. But I really enjoy your company. It becomes a lot simpler, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost so nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I still kind of struggle with male friendship. I think it's because I haven't really had a lot of it in my life, and so like I kind of came, like when we went to Lambda, that was the first time I was around boys for like a long amount of time that wasn't like a hangout, like meet up, you know. And I think it was really good for me,
really,
because I think same-sex education can be it's not like, it's not the real world, is it? And you're like saturated with one type of person, especially when you're like going to school in fucking Surbiton High, like everyone is very similar, and then you're exposed to a broader kind of education, and I think that was just so good for me.
Do you think you kind of miss that male friendship?
Definitely, yeah. 100%, yeah. But whereas like my sister Erica has so many great male friends, and I think that's because of the music industry and, like, you know, they write together and they gig together and all of that. Yeah. So I think, you know, the more one works in our industry, like as an actor, I think you can make those kinds of relationships where it's very like black and white and clear and simple.
Yeah,
and it's
definitely
not anything to do with, you know, being attracted to each other or not being attracted to each other. But I think growing up in an all-girl environment, it really sets you up for seeing the opposite sex as someone to either be attracted to or have them be attracted to you, as opposed to it just being completely platonic. So yeah,
see, Hanako, I think because I also went to an all-girl school, but I did have male friends because I would fall in love with them and they wouldn't feel the same. So you just become their friend. The problem was that you were hot and everyone probably would have wanted to actually bang you.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think...
I definitely get that dynamic. I definitely get it. And yeah. I've grown up with two brothers, went to a mixed school. I lived in like a mixed boarding house. You know, and I still get that feeling. Like, I felt like always through school, as soon as I'd be like, oh, I've really got a good friend here, it would be weird. And I totally get that thing of like missing male friends. And I love the women in my life. But you do think sometimes like, oh, there's, you know, it's different.
It's nice to have the dynamic present if you can. But also like, this is the beauty of having lots of friends, right? And you collect them throughout your life. Different people give you different things. And also because, you know, what is gender? Gender is... a construct and sometimes considerable, like could be considered to be a bit stupid, is where I've sort of feeling my feelings about gender at the moment. And I have lots of female friends who give me big
male energy. Totally.
Or non-binary. And it's that thing of being like, just because it's not someone who was, you know, assigned male at birth, who is that friend for you? I think those male attributes that one wants in their life can actually be given to you in a female assigned at birth dynamic.
Mm. Speaking of, fucking queer groups and gender being a big old construct, you ready to hear about someone who defines all the fucking constructs? Not defines, defies.
Defies.
No N.
Absolute no N legend. Is present, including in the pronunciation of her name. Maybe not. I have a queen.
A literal queen.
/ king.
Yeah.
So introduced her last week as Queen Nzinga.
Isn't that not how you pronounce?
There are all sorts of different pronunciations. So I watched a lecture with this brilliant woman. I'm going to put her name in the show notes and the link in the show notes. And she says Jenga. So Queen Jenga. Okay.
Cool.
Whether that is like a colloquialism or whether that's the pronunciation, whether that's the Portuguese thing. I'm not sure. But I like it.
Yeah.
So introducing Queen Jenga.
Yay.
Yes.
Take us away, baby.
So I take you back.
Oh, I love this bit.
To 1583.
Ooh. Oh, this is the earliest we've gone, girl.
It is, isn't it? So I take you back to Ndongo in central West Africa. There was a great king of Ndongo, and he was in love with one of his concubines, Kengela. She was an enslaved wife. Kengela became pregnant and gave birth to a woman who would become a legend.
Oh my God.
When she was born, the umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck, yet she survived. It was said that those who survived difficult births would grow to become powerful people. The baby's name was Jenga, and one day she would become the queen of the Umbundu kingdoms of Ndongo and Matamba, located in present-day northern Angola.
I'm sold.
Oh my goodness.
Sign me up for the first film and all the sequels. I'm
the
obsessed.
The fucking 10-part series. She's incredible. So in Queen Jenga's life, she lived for 80 years. That's fucking long for someone born in 1583.
She lived for 80 years.
80 years, yeah. So fucking she lived till hell. She was an old girl. And there are more than 10,000 references to Queen Jenga in historical documents, including letters, diary entries, where people speak about her or, you know, letters that she has sent in her life. So 10,000 references. This story
bloody
reads...
Hell, she is well documented for the 1500s.
Well documented. Mm. And the story reads like a legend, but it's
A legend about a legend.
So she's now spoken about as the mother of Angola. Her legacy lives on in so many ways. There's a statue of her in the capital. You know, in so many ways, she's become a symbol of rebellion and power and you know, feminine power as well, and has really left her imprint upon the country, where she's kind of, you know, revered in the same way that, you know, Boudicca is here, or, Catherine the Great, or Elizabeth the First, you know, those kinds of women who...
She's the one you find out about and you go, oh my God, when you're like a young person and you're like, that's mind-blowing and so exciting.
Yeah.
To know
so my geography is really shite. Where is Angola?
So you have Africa.
Yeah.
And you have a larger bit at the top, and then it's got the longer bit in the bottom. and you have Egypt up the top, then it goes up into Saudi Arabia, like right north, it goes up to kind of Spain and Portugal, Europe. And then obviously at the bottom is South Africa. Mm-hmm. So Angola is above South Africa on that kind of pointy bit of Africa on the western side.
So like central western Africa.
Yeah, central western Africa. It's just underneath the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay.
And it was the northern part that she was the queen of. So Luanda was the capital of Ndongo, which is now the capital of Angola, as far as I'm aware. And the land there was kind of fought over for years and years and years and years. And there were always kind of people taking over and stuff like that. So initially at this point, it's the northern part of Angola in the regions Ndongo and Matamba eventually that she becomes the queen of.
Nice. So
when she was 10 years old, her father became the king of Ndongo. As a child, Jinga was greatly favoured by her father. Some say it was because she wasn't considered an heir to the throne like her brothers would be because of her sex. So she wasn't actually seen as direct competition to the king. So the king would freely lavish attention upon her without offending any of his more likely heirs.
Oh my God, the one time being a lady really paid off in the 1500s.
Exactly. But then others say it's because her father saw her power and her prowess and, you know, her skill and her talent and the potential in her and decided to train that appropriately.
And it's so nice as well to be like, oh, it's so reductive to just be like, oh, she's not a threat because she's a woman. But actually the reality is hopefully, you know, bodes well for both of them in that situation.
Exactly that. So she received military training and was trained as a warrior to fight alongside her father.
That doesn't sound like something you would do to...
Right? Just like, oh, my beloved daughter.
If you didn't respect women,
come into battle with me.
Yeah.
Right?
Go on.
Like, my little princess, come fucking fight with me with your battle axe.
Here's a sword.
Right?
Whatever, a battle axe, yeah.
So she fought with a battle axe, which was the traditional weapon of the warriors. I know.
Oh my gosh, and that's so much cooler than a sword.
Right? Yeah, I will put a picture of it on Instagram as well, because you can see these axes. And she participated in many official and governance duties alongside her father, including legal councils, war councils, and important rituals. So Jinga was taught Portuguese by visiting missionaries and taught to read and write in Portuguese, which would become an important skill in her life. Mm. So at this time...
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah, at this time, the Kingdom of Ndongo was managing multiple crises, largely due to conflicts with the Portuguese Empire.
Mm.
So this is a fucking colonial story.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do they take up Christianity or do they maintain their religion?
That's debated. I'll kind of get to that. But yeah, a lot of the accounts of her are not necessarily reliable. Because a lot, you know, in Lisbon, you'll find loads of archives and loads of people writing and talking about her in like all the Lisbon archives because of the Portuguese colonization. And some of them, you know, you think, you know, we like take a critical eye and you look at it and you think, you know, maybe that was like the thing with her father didn't see her as a viable heir.
Yeah.
That's such a way of being like, well, her father didn't believe in her.
Yeah.
Instead of like, her father believed in her so much. How much of it is kind of propaganda?
Yeah.
So at this point, the Portuguese had first come to Ndongo in 1575 when they established a trading post in Luanda with the help of the Kingdom of Congo, who are Ndongo's northern rival. Despite several years of initial cooperation between Ndongo and Portugal, relations soured between the two kingdoms and developed into decades of war between them. By the 1580s, large parts of Ndongo had fallen under Portuguese control, and the Portuguese waged war in a brutal style, burning villages and taking hostages. And what do you think became of those hostages?
Slaves.
In addition to territorial conquests, the Portuguese seized large numbers of slaves during the conflict. 50,000, according to one source, and built forts inside Ndongan territory to control the slave trade. The majority of the enslaved Africans taken to the Americas were Jinga's people between 1580 and 1640. Yeah, they were called the Kimbundu people of Angola, and they, they were the majority of the people who became enslaved at that time. Ndongo rallied against the Portuguese, defeating them in the Battle of Lucala in 1590, but not before the kingdom had lost much of its territory. The conflict had also eroded the power of the monarchy and the king, so many Ndongan noblemen began refusing to pay tribute to the crown, and some began to side with the Portuguese, so the Portuguese's power is really rallying at this point.
Yeah.
So by the time Jinga's father became the king in 1593, the area had been so devastated by war and the power of the king wasn't the same as what it was. He tried a variety of methods to handle the crisis, including diplomacy, negotiations and open warfare, but was unable to improve the situation. So in 1617, Jinga's father died and Ngola Mbandi, his son, and Jinga's brother came to power. So this is when it gets fucking Game of Thrones.
I feel like this is going to get very Shakespearean. Yeah.
It is just a story of power and the destruction that power causes and the utter chaos.
The original succession.
It is. It really is, actually. So upon assuming the throne, Ngola Mbandi, Jinga's brother, engaged in months of political bloodletting. He killed many rival claimants to the throne, including his older half-brother and their family.
God. Mm-hmm. God's sake.
So 35...
I mean, that's highly unsettling for Jinga.
Right?
She's like, when am I next?
Another time, probably, that being a woman actually might work in your favour.
Well,
yeah,
she's 35 at the time. Jinga was spared, but the new king ordered her young son killed. And she and her two sisters were forcibly sterilised, ensuring that they would never have children again.
Oh my God, that's horrific.
And what the fuck does that look like in the 1500s? Oh no, 1600s right? Now, but still.
Getting sterilised, I know.
Yeah. Oh God.
I know.
Those poor women.
So, fearing for her life, Jinga fled to the kingdom of Matamba, which we think is east.
Southeast.
Southeast. You have Ndongo, and in southeast you have Matamba.
Yeah.
So having won his throne, Mbadi vowed to continue the war against the Portuguese colonisers. But he lacked military skill. And faced with the Portuguese threat, in 1621 he contacted Jinga, asking her to be his emissary to the Portuguese in Luanda. Fucking crawling back.
Now look, you want a bloody favour?
Oh, hi. After fucking
give me my womb back first. Oh, wait, you can't.
Give me my fucking child.
Yeah, fuck me.
What the fuck?
I know.
You'd be like, bro. Literally, bro. No.
Drink.
No. She literally does.
Drink.
So obviously Jinga is the best fit for the job. She's of royal lineage. She speaks fluent Portuguese. Jinga agreed and asked for the authority to negotiate in the king's name. It's described that Jinga comes into Luanda wearing opulent traditional clothing, something that previous rulers had chosen not to do because the Portuguese just didn't respect it. So she wore the traditional clothing of the Ndongo people in order to display that their culture was not inferior.
Fuck yeah.
The Portuguese governor was sat in a chair higher than Jinga and offered Jinga a seat on the carpet as leaders.
That's such small dick energy.
Right.
That's so disrespectful.
They did
but it's the overcompensating leapt out.
Yeah.
You don't need a big chair if you have a big dick.
Oh, thank you.
Can well, you do because no. Yeah, if no, it's too big, you need the space to lay it out.
This is true. You also, need legs you know, wide. Well, it's big it's balls, even, maybe that.
Yeah. It's not even about, I mean, we all know it's not the size of the wave, it's the motion of the ocean anyway, but that's it's that thing say. Of being like, how intimidated is your masculinity? Like, is your ego?
Yeah, and I think actually this is like white fragility as well. Okay.
Yes.
This is colonizer fragility.
100%.
Very clearly, because they made the rulers of countries that they had colonized sit on the floor as a symbol of
yikes
of their kind of power loss.
Oh my god, it's just Fajinga. So like
it's awful.
How embarrassing, basically.
It's cringe.
How embarrassing for
it's
you.
cringe. That's how you show your power.
Ugh.
I mean, yeah,
get a hobby.
She refused to sit. She called a member of her party god. Over and told him to kneel on the floor, and she sat on his back.
Oh,
oh my god,
that's sexy,
right? There's a picture
I'd be
of
that
it.
Man
there's no. amazing pictures of it, like
iconic.
Artists obviously did at the time.
She yeah refused. Okay, so I was like, in my head photography wasn't around this time, but
no, they did. No, paintings. Photography's not around, but paintings are fucking rife. Mm. Yeah,
yes.
Way painting less time galore. efficient, but they are there. So she refused to let the Portuguese see them as a people who had been conquered, and she demanded that they be seen as equals. When she got up to leave, the Portuguese asked if she would take her chair, to which she responded, I have many more.
So she left the guy there? She left the bloke?
Well, I'm sure he came. I don't know. But that's what the thing
she's doing it for effect.
Well, maybe.
She
was like, I don't know. She's like, maybe here. She just left him.
Maybe she just transformed him into an actual chair.
Oh my god,
she's
maybe.
A witch.
She's Professor
McGonagall.
McGonagall.
I'm shocked.
She's really good at transfiguration.
Yeah. Maybe. I would say that
Turn
is
fat, black,
the theory.
Yellow.
I would say that theory
the leading
is
the theory.
Most, yeah, realistic.
Yeah, yeah it's
makes
the leading
the most
theory.
Sense.
Yeah.
What is it? Something mellow, turn this stupid fat
rat yellow. Fat rat yellow.
Yeah, she turned up, did that, and he turned into a chair.
Exactly that.
That Imagine. Is fact.
I'm that sure is there Google is an it. Account saying that. She was a witch. She turned a person into
oh,
a chair.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, Jinga, back to her amazing negotiation skills. The Portuguese used to ask for tribute from the nations that they had colonized / conquered, as they would have called
what?
It. So when the Portuguese asked her for tribute, she told them that she was there to negotiate as an independent representative of an independent country. She said, if you want a gift, I'll give you a gift and you can give us gifts, but we give gifts as equals. You do not ask equals for tribute.
Mm.
So the Portuguese couldn't understand her power or her authority, because in their world, women didn't speak back, especially African women who they saw as enslaved people in their colonial settlements and in their own countries. Mm. As an ambassador, Jinga's main goal was to secure peace between her people and the Portuguese. To this end, she promised the Portuguese an end to hostilities, describing her brother's previous actions as the mistake of a young king, allowed Portuguese slave traders inside Ndongo, and offered to return escaped Portuguese slaves fighting in her brother's army. So there are...
So they're trading.
There is trade happening. Mm. And, you know, I'll get to it later, but that did put her at odds with some of her people.
Mm-hmm.
Because she allowed trading, and she allowed specifically the trading
slave
of enslaved Ndongos. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the Portuguese questioned again her commitment to peace, Jinga offered to be publicly baptized, and she was in Luanda.
Fuck.
Yeah. So this is a tactic Jinga used. She strategically appropriated elements of European culture for her benefits. Though she was baptized, her religion was always, you know, there were things that she did that were aligned to her, you know, cultural spirituality and kind of home religion. And, you know, in times in the future, she would adopt different cultures religions. So this was a tactic that she used. She was really smart.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she didn't have a problem with kind of using and kind of playing people.
And she wasn't bound to a religion that she grew up with. No. That she felt she was...
But she still
disrespecting.
No, but she definitely still practiced Ndongan religion,
right?
And cultural, you know, spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she wasn't just wasn't dogmatic about it.
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah.
So a peace treaty was subsequently agreed upon, and Jinga returned home in triumph in 1622.
Wow.
However, by 1623, tensions with the Portuguese had started again. And by 1624, King Mabadi had fallen into a deep depression and was forced to cede many of his duties to Jinga.
This is her brother.
Her brother.
I wonder how much credit she was getting
for this. His sins are catching up with
him. His sins are catching up with him. Yeah. So in 1624, her brother died of mysterious causes. Some say suicide, others say poison. Whether Jinga had her hand...
Ooh.
Who knows?
I feel like she doesn't. I feel like...
Oh, wait for it.
I don't know. Wait for Maybe it. She does.
So before his death, he'd made it clear that Jinga should be his successor. She assumed the title of Ngola, which I think means the king. However, one major obstacle to her rule remained. Her 7-year-old nephew. So her brother's son.
Flip.
So to remove this potential pretender to her throne, Jinga approached her nephew's guardian with a marriage proposal.
No.
No, not her nephew. So she would marry... We're not quite in Game of Thrones. There's not
Okay, I was literally like, the fact that you said Game of Thrones, I was like, he's 7.
I know, that would be too much.
His first cousin, that's...
That would be too much.
I don't know who needs to hear this, but that's not okay.
That's not okay. That's too much blood. So she approached her nephew's guardian with a marriage proposal to marry the guardian. And then the couple were married. And after the wedding, she had her nephew killed.
Oh, cool. Savage.
In Jinga's view, final revenge for her own murdered son.
Do you know what? A child for a child is the old saying goes.
Eye for an eye.
Yeah.
It literally does, isn't it? Eye for an eye. Is that what that means?
Yeah, an eye for an eye. Yeah.
I will say, though, the person who she's attempting to punish already dead, so...
Yeah, and also...
Yeah, but...
It's not the nephew's fault.
It's not.
It's not his fault. It didn't do anything wrong. So she went on her own similar spree, killing lots of people who had kind of claims to her thrones and disagreed with her.
Oh, my God.
And she faced many accusations over her claim to the throne, including her parentage, her sex... So her parentage was, her mother was a concubine. She wasn't a full child.
I was thinking that as well, yeah.
So I guess they, we would know them as a bastard.
Yeah. Because there's so much of that with, I mean, like British rule as well. Mm. Like even with, I guess like Elizabeth and like the Tudors, you've got that just from a divorce. So never mind a concubine. Like I can't even imagine how many people would try and comfy your... position.
Yeah.
Mind you, I wonder if people were a little bit like, you know what, even if it is a bit of a wobbly one, she's really good. I don't know if I want to knock her off the throne.
At this point, she's not, you know, she's not proved herself necessarily at this point. So she has a lot of people against her. Yeah. So her willingness to negotiate with the Portuguese rather than to fight them, including her willingness to allow slave traders inside of Ndongo, is a big problem for people.
But it's almost like the feminine perspective, because it's all about compromise as opposed to just kill, attack, my way or the highway.
Yeah, her ultimate goal is peace. Mm. You know, that's quite clear in the writings, is that she... It's tough, isn't it? Because her ultimate goal is peace.
Mm.
But, you know, through that is her ultimate goal of power.
Yeah.
You know, because when she is powerful, she can create peace. And it's that kind of toss-up.
But power's great, right? As long as you're using it for good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's what you will do to get there.
Goal, her end goal feels virtuous, yes, but the way in which she's getting there so far feels a little bit dodgy, right, with all the killing.
Yeah.
Ideally, don't do that.
Ideally, but I guess not.
Both sides are murdering left, right and centre, right?
Yeah. I mean, they are, totally. Totally. Like, war. It's war.
We don't...
All is fair, famously.
Famously.
In love and war.
It does give me, like, Daenerys Game of Thrones vibes.
Yeah, it does.
Like,
I'm just waiting for that dragon.
No, I'm joking. There's no dragon. So, at this point, actually... both the Portuguese governors and Ginga were increasingly competing with the other to control the slave trade themselves. So as tensions grew, to weaken the Portuguese colonial administration, Ginga dispatched messengers to encourage Mbonde slaves to flee Portuguese plantations and join her kingdom, thereby depriving the colony of its income and manpower. The Portuguese complained about the escapes, and Ginga replied that she'd abide by her earlier treaty and return escaped slaves if, you know, they agreed to peace.
Mm-hmm.
So her nobles were rebelling. The Portuguese were no longer with her. Before long, another war was declared on Ginga on the 15th of March, 1626.
Uh-oh. Shit.
So Ginga is famous for riding at the front of her army.
Oh, my God. What a fucking...
I know.
Oh. Queen?
She did... A queen?
Literally.
She didn't command from the back. She was in the throes fighting a war. Fighting battles. However...
Bloody hell. I'd shit myself.
Right, no, you'd literally shit yourself, though.
No, her quite truly.
Her at the front with her battle axe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bloody Nora.
I know. Fucking fighting.
I'd just submit immediately as soon as I saw that.
You would literally poo your pants.
I'd poo my pants and then submit. I'd just be a little doggy on the floor.
I think I'd do that thing of being like, fuck, I'm going to go for it. And then I'd end up in a tapestry with an arrow through my eye. Like,
a tapestry?
With like three gallops.
Why
do you know that really famous tapestry of the king getting the arrow through the eye? Is it Battle of Hastings, that one? I can't remember. Some bloody British battle about something stupid.
Some bloke.
I'm sure. Some silly bloke.
I thought you meant you'd go head first into a tapestry. And I was like, where is this tapestry coming from?
Same, no, that's just... what I thought. I thought it was like a murder thing that they'd like rolled you up in a tapestry to hide your body.
They would make a tapestry of my really embarrassing death, then bury me in it. Mm. That's how it would go.
Okay, so despite... being much, 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 much braver than us. She lost a series of battles.
No!
I know.
That's what has meant to go.
I know. And
look,
fled.
She needs something to bounce back from. Do you know what I mean?
She's fled to Eastern Dongo. And again, attempted to negotiate with the Portuguese, sending a peace delegation and a gift of 400 slaves.
Oh. Nah.
They refused.
Just send a fruit basket.
I know. Can we not send people?
People.
In Ndongo, the common people and lesser nobles supported Ginga, while many powerful nobles supported her competing nobles and the Portuguese. At this point, Ginga is desperate for the throne. She indicated that she was willing to become a vassal of the Kingdom of Portugal and pay tribute if they supported her claim to the throne. But she was adamant that she was the rightful queen of Ndongo. The Portuguese, however, rejected the offer, beheading her lead diplomat and issuing the counter demand that she retire from public life, renounce her claim to the kingdom of Ndongo, and submit to Nogla Harry, who is the rightful, in their eyes, king. These demands were within the diplomatic norm in Europe, but to her, they were utterly unacceptable. So faced with the Portuguese rebuke and the realisation that many Ndongo nobles stood against her, Ginga, as had her father and brother, slipped into a depression, locking herself in a room for several weeks. She suffered a series of military defeats, most notably in a Portuguese ambush that saw half of her army and most of her officials and her two sisters captured.
Oh my God.
So she herself was able to escape. by the lake.
Can you imagine? I mean, that is yeah. not just a bullet to the head either. That is fucking full on battle axing up your body.
I know.
Limbs everywhere. Like, that's just got to do stuff to you. I know. No wonder she locked herself in a room for weeks.
Yeah. Imagine what she's seen.
Oh.
Doesn't terrifying. Bear thinking about, yeah.
So her army has been greatly reduced and she'd been effectively expelled from her kingdom. Yet she continued to fight. Jinga wanted to be in power. In a lecture that I watched about Jinga's life, the woman said, "Leadership doesn't come easy. Anyone who thinks that, don't enter politics. You have to go for the jugular. You lie, you cheat, you do everything. You promise everything and you get into power. Power's not nice. Power's not achieved by being good."
Oh, that's very cynical. Isn't it?
Well, I guess there's a real thing, isn't there?
Fucking when, hell.
But they say that, you know, any bloody political party trying to get in is promising X, Y, and Z in the hope that they get there and then do what they deem to be the greatest good. That's why so many people compromise on their morals and everything, because they're like, when I actually get in there, when I actually have influence, I can do all the right things, I can make all the changes that need to happen. And even more so if people are already against you, as they would have been, you know, in this situation, I can imagine you'd feel like you need to compromise more just to try and get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it right, but it doesn't justify it, but it does explain it.
Yeah, exactly that. She's not a perfect woman by any means.
Who is? Except for us, obviously. But
yeah, she's a warrior and she's fighting fucking awful people.
Tooth and nail.
So she marries again. This time to the new leader of the Mbangala warriors.
Ooh.
They're like this tribe in Africa who fight deadly. They have again, these are like, who knows, they're not reliable resources, but they have all these rituals. They're said there's like cannibalism. I highly doubt that. But they are like a fighting people. And the Ndongo has been at war with them for years.
Oh,
and
wow.
she twice has created
She's
an alliance.
Making an alliance.
Yes. So this is her thing. She creates alliances. So again, she's created an alliance with these peoples. By 1631, so 4 years later, 5 years later, she's completely rebuilt her army in the style of the Mbangala warriors. And she's waging a successful guerrilla war against the Portuguese. One Jesuit priest living in the Congo at the time described her as being akin to an Amazon queen and praised her leadership. She invaded the neighbouring kingdom of Matamba, capturing and deposing Queen Mwongo Matamba. She spared her life and took her daughter into service as one of the warriors.
Wow.
So having defeated the Matambans, Jinga uses the kingdom as a base to wage her war to reclaim her homeland. Unlike her native Ndongo, Matamba has a cultural tradition of female leadership, giving Jinga a way more stable power base as she overthrew the previous queen. With Matamba under her control, Jinga works to expand the slave trade in her new kingdom, using the profits of slave trading to finance her wars and divert trade income away from the Portuguese. So during this decade, Jinga starts to take on more masculine traits. She adopts male titles and clothing. She establishes an all-female bodyguard for herself. I mean, you can see the film,
so
right?
Sick.
Like,
so
you can see
this
the film.
This needs to happen.
Doesn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. But this is all the basis of like Game of Thrones never... She ran. She walked so that Game of Thrones could run.
Could fucking run, didn't she? An all-female bodyguard. That's fucking Black Panther shit.
Yeah.
It's fucking cool.
So sick.
Is, can I ask then, at any point, did she change her pronouns, like, if she's taking on these male titles?
So she began to answer only to King.
Oh,
she didn't answer to anything else but King.
Mm.
So she also establishes a harem.
Oh my God.
Of around 50 to 60 male lovers.
What? And ain't nobody got time for that?
In women's clothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds a bit fruity to me, you know?
Sounds a bit nutty. A bit fucking fruity. So this is a thing where there's records of this in African history where a woman would marry a man, but the genders would be swapped. So the sex would be still male, female sometimes.
Yeah.
So you can still have like children and stuff like that. But the gender would be reversed. So it would be a masculine or a male sex woman, sex female, and then the man would be the woman in the relation, you know, that it's like massively recorded
the gender
in history.
Contract with swap,
it was just, it was, yeah, flip. And there, you know, I haven't done enough research on it, but it seems like there's still a gender dynamic and there's still, like, you know, producing children, but there's not that, there's just this fluidity in gender that is kind of, I don't know what European culture is beginning to,
yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you see it across the globe back then, and then all these white people,
right,
started colonizing these countries, and with that came these gender norms.
Yeah,
well, yeah, it's just another form.
You see that in the Native American culture as well.
Yeah, so yeah, so she keeps this harem of 50 to 60 male lovers dressed as
that
women.
That sounds like a lot of admin.
A lot of faff.
A lot of faff. This is fucking incredible. According to Dapper's description of Africa, she had them fight to the death for the privilege and duty of spending the night with her.
We've all been there.
And in the morning, the winner was put to death.
Holy what? Oh my God, that is some Black Widow shit.
The winner would be
the winner was put to death. So they'd spend the night with her and then they'd die.
Oh my God.
What, that is, you know what? Fuck the tapestry. That's how I want to die.
That is how I want to go.
Yeah.
And nothing else will fucking suffice. But absolutely again, that was...
Oh my God. I mean, that must have been a very interesting night that guy, like the winner has, right? Because you're having sex and you're like,
I'm gonna die.
You're gonna kill me. You're gonna kill me tomorrow morning. How do you come? How do you finish?
The pressure. So look, much pressure. That's a European account. So I'm not sure it's 100% reliable that she did kill them.
I hope
that, like,
is true.
Imagine being confronted with this African queen. This, like, symbol of wealth. Yeah, king. Yeah, exactly, king. This symbol of wealth and prowess and power and, you know, all of the things that, you know, like, we're taught to aspire to. And she's black. It's like, I've met God, she's black.
Yeah.
Imagine how much they'd struggle with that. So many of the accounts,
yeah,
of
totally
her, you know, this woman who keeps male lovers,
people can't possibly wrap their head around it.
Yeah, let's turn her into, you know, she kills them all, or she's this black witch, you know. You wonder what they create.
It's exactly the same thing that happened to Josephine Baker. This they couldn't handle the truth of this woman, and so they vilify her.
Yeah. So this is a bit about the queering of gender roles in Africa. So her female husbandry, they call it, illustrates the queering of gender roles in Africa, traditionally less closely identified with biological sex. Jinga's ability to perform a queer identity can be partly attributed to her royal status and power. So it's not saying that everyone would have been able to do this. She instituted as well communal sleeping quarters at her court.
That sounds fun.
I know, so they all just like slept together, which is
a bit like being in boarding school.
Super cute. But she enforced strict chastity rules for her male counsellors and female bodyguards.
Well, that doesn't sound fun.
I know.
So she's also
fun,
a bit of a cop block.
Bit of a cop block.
The irony, really.
I know.
Come on.
50 or 60? 50 or 60?
Greedy guts.
Come on, honestly, that is more than enough to go around.
I know.
Sharing is caring.
Plenty.
Yeah.
So in this 10 years, Jingo also established a lucrative slave trade with the Dutch, and they purchased as many as 13,000? Yeah, 13,000 slaves per year. Yikes. From Jingo's
per
kingdom.
Per year?
Seriously, man, the Dutch.
I know.
Yeah,
she continued to occasionally send peace overtures to the Portuguese, even suggesting a military alliance with them, but only if they supported her return to Ndongo. She now refused to be readmitted to the Christian faith, which became a point of contention. Mm-hmm. So the Dutch captured Luanda, driving the Portuguese out of Ndongo, which left Jinga's kingdom as the preeminent, if temporary, slave trading power in the region. It allowed for her to build up a sizable army of 80,000 mercenaries, escaped slaves, allies, and her own soldiers. Using the large size of her army, her new wealth, and her famous reputation, Jingo was able to reclaim large parts of Ndongo from 1641 to 1644.
Wow.
By 1644, she considered only one person in the Congo to be her political equal in the region. She now defeated the Portuguese in battle and recaptured one of her sisters who'd been taken by the Portuguese.
Oh, good.
However, archives show that her captive sister, Fundi, had been in secret correspondence with Jinga and had revealed coveted Portuguese plans to her. As a result of the woman spying, the Portuguese reputedly drowned her sister in the Kwanza River.
Oh my God.
Jinga, furious and in grief, laid siege to the Portuguese capital of Masungano, isolating the Portuguese there. By 1648, Jinga controlled much of her former kingdom, while her control over the slave trade increased the economic power of Matamba. While her wars against the Portuguese and their allies continued, Jinga created allies with the neighbouring kingdoms, expanding her influence even as she aged.
So she has this alliance with the Dutch, right? That's allowing her to do all of this. Well, allowed
the trading, yeah. She's now the wealthiest, most powerful person in that whole region.
Because of the slave trade and
because
their
of the
agreement.
Slave, yeah. And because she's got a massive army and she's now taking back the parts of Ndongo that had been colonised, and she's taking back parts of the region.
And because the Portuguese are out now.
Totally. So now all of her nobles, everyone is behind her. Nobody doubts her. The common people are behind her. Everyone believes in her and trusts her as their ruler. So now she's old, much older now. And she fears that her death will lead to a succession crisis. She's spent much of the later part of her life...
getting rid of them all.
Converting people to Christianity.
Oh, wait... Oh, no.
Wait, but I thought
as part
she
of the agreement.
Refuted.
So she refused to become Christian again. And then when she's taken over the region, she decides again that she will start adopting the Christianity.
Fuck, that's so much to be wrestling with as well.
Yeah, I know.
A, like, spiritual crisis.
Yeah. So to ensure the tradition would be smooth... she appointed her sister, Kumbu, as her heir, foregoing any of the traditional Mubundu elections.
Well, but she doesn't have an heir because she can't get pregnant,
they can't have
right?
children.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So she goes against what people would have wanted, and she appoints a woman as her successor. So Angola now, today, 2021, has a tradition of abundant female leaders and women in power.
Hey.
The legacy of Jinga still lives on. The mother of Angola. Though she's not perfect by any means, hers is a story of a warrior, a trailblazer, and a queen.
Oh my
God. And a king.
Literally.
And a king.
And a king.
Oh, that was amazing.
She's just incredible.
Truly
what an incredible
what a
person.
Story.
What a story.
Again, why has this not been made into
I know.
A film?
Well... we know why, but
you can just
me,
see
miss, like,
the hall.
What a waste!
Can't
but it is that thing as well of being like, of course, this has been made. It's been made
I know.
In Game of Thrones.
I know. It's
been by white people about white people.
Yeah, exactly. They've taken, you know, a story about like Vikings and they've made it about Vikings or some shit. And it's like,
yeah.
This story needs to be made and honoured, you know?
And it's a fight against fucking colonialisation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, don't.
Which makes it even more.
It makes it even more.
It's not just about fucking power and family dynamics.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kath, you absolutely smashed that.
I just wanted to keep researching forever.
I can imagine.
So interesting.
Fascinating.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much. Oh, brilliant choice.
Pleasure.
Brilliant storytelling.
Yeah, and there's going to be loads of show notes on this one, guys. So please look at them, read them, watch the videos, listen to the podcast, support.
We'll definitely put them on Instagram as well. I think I do a little screenshot.
Yeah.
Okay, girls, are you ready for our very sexy listener to come on the mic and tell us a glorious story?
The sexiest listener story we've ever had.
Sexiest of all sexy stories.
Okay, here she is. Welcome to the podcast, Finella.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I feel a bit starstruck, actually. You might be my best mates, but I still feel starstruck.
We're so thrilled to have you here. We love to meet our fans.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I will say that I already know this listener story, and it's one of my all-time favourite stories. I'm really thrilled that I get to watch Kath hear it for the first time.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Halfway through, I'm going to go, do know this story.
I haven't actually thought about this in a while, and I was kind of arranging my thoughts earlier, and I was like, this is a joke.
Yeah, it's messed up, right?
Yeah, he's sick in the head.
I can't remember all the ins and outs, literally. go for it.
Shall I begin?
Take it away, Finella.
Okay.
Once upon a time.
Right, so it all started when I was working as a caterer upon leaving drama school. So this was like a month out. I'm just setting this up because I want to set up my mental state as well, where I was at mentally.
Yeah, we've all done that catering job as well. When you get out of drama school and you're like, it's quite good pay. Does it eat away at my soul?
Yes.
With every bite I serve? Yes.
Famously. Well, I'm pretty sure it was like £8.65 an hour, so I don't think it was exceptional pay.
It wasn't even good pay.
You know, the thing that got me through was like flirting with co-workers. It really gave me quite a rush and kind of got me through the shifts. But anyway, I was doing the shift and there was quite a salty guy on the shift.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I was thinking of a way to describe him. He had a shaved head, but it was kind of like blonde. He had a hoop earring. He was very 90s.
Yes.
So like
bad boy 90s.
Yes. Oh, yes, exactly. And it was like,
and
you could kind
how tall was he?
He was like 6'1".
Oh,
see, yeah. He could have been an absolute munter and even still.
Yeah, 6'1". And like, you can subtly tailor your catering uniform to look a bit quirky. And he was wearing Docs. You know, he had this hoop earring. I could sense he was a bit edgy, and I was like, And I remember we were getting briefed, and we kind of kept making eye contact at each other, and it was fit. And then throughout the shift, we kind of kept standing next to each other and like having bits of conversation, and it was just sexy. I was like, oh, this is really fun. Anyway, I left the shift, and then he slid into my DMs,
as they do.
Slid on in.
Yeah, he did. And he was like quite forceful and was like, I really want to see you. And I was like, as I was saying, I just left drama school. I was a bit down in the dumps doing catering. I was like, you know what? Why not? This is really fun. This is quite random, but it's quite fun. I'm going to go for it. So he actually came round that evening. It was really random.
Post-catering.
Yeah, so I got home and then he came round. It was really random. And then we just hung out. Anyway, I was 23 at the time, and he told me he was 20. And even 20, I was like, oh, it feels quite young. It feels quite young.
Mm. Feels a bit jailbaited.
Yeah. It then turned out that he was actually 19.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Can't be a teenager.
Tell you the truth.
You can't date a teenager.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it turned out he was 19 and I was a bit like freaked out. Anyway, but then we ended up being on another shift together because I was like, I'm going to put this to bed. This is a bit weird. Like I'm flirting with like a teenager. Then we had another shift together and again, the sparks were flying. I couldn't resist it. And when he changed back...
Age is but a number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when he changed back into his normal clothes, he was wearing like a white t-shirt, baggy white t-shirt with a chain and these big denim... baggy trousers and the whole thing was so Blink 182 meets Eminem.
Oh,
it was
fit
and I was like I'm into it. Anyway, so then we started chatting again and he was like, look, do you want to come to my uni? I'm going back to uni. So this is so rogue looking.
Wait,
back
he
at
said
it.
That to
yeah,
you.
He, yeah, he was like, do you want to come visit me at uni? He lived in Norwich, like he was in halls in Norwich, but he was in London for the summer.
Halls.
Yeah.
Oh god.
And I was like, this is ridiculous if I actually go. But my sister was like, do you know what, no, why don't you just go for the bants, like just go, he's fit,
it's
it might
story.
Be fun,
do it for the anecdote.
Do it for the anecdote. And as I said, my soul was a bit destroyed upon leaving drama school. Yes. I was kind of like, oh whatever. Anyway, so I booked a ticket. I booked a 3-hour bus to Norwich to go see this dude.
Right, making no fucking money
working a caterer. You exactly for several hours
to pay for
to
that
get upon
fucking
that bus
ticket
from Norwich.
Exactly. Oh, and like the weeks leading up to it, so it was like a couple of weeks where we didn't see each other and he kept sending me pictures of himself. The whole thing was kind of like, oh, it's so weird thinking that he was 19, but the whole thing was really fit. And he kept sending me voice notes like, I'm so excited to see you. I even forwarded them to people and I was like, how fit is his voice? And people were like, to be fair, it's fit.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so I was like, oh, he's so excited to see me. This is kind of hot. Anyway, I remember so distinctly, I got off of the bus and it was dark and it was late. It was like his gran had just got off the bus. He was like looking at the floor, barely greeted me. And I was like, oh, it just kind of went down like a lead balloon. I was expecting it to be like this really fun meet cute and it was not cute.
It was,
it was not.
And he was mumbling because he's a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Anyway, so he was like looking at the floor and I was like, okay, I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. I probably look really fit. He's probably feeling a bit shy right now.
This is absolutely the attitude everyone needs to have.
Yeah.
When people are being weird, I'm like, oh, you must be overpowered by my presence. That's awful for you.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. Anyway, so that night, it was a bit strange. We got back to his, he was very eager to go to sleep and have an early night. And I was thinking, okay, we barely chatted. He was kind of almost ignoring me. And I was like, okay, this is, what have I done here? This is a disaster. So we went to bed because I was staying two nights, people.
Oh, no.
I was staying two nights. It was ridiculous.
Oh, no. One night, but two.
But two. Anyway, then we wake up and we have a day out in Norwich together.
What does a day out in Norwich look like?
Yeah, it's like walking the cobbled streets and like, you know,
and
looking
saying
at
nothing.
Churches. And, yeah, saying the bare minimum. He kept going off on his phone. There was no chat. At one point, I went to the toilet and I texted my flatmate and I was like, I cannot believe this. He's not even talking to me. And I felt like such a fool. I was like, what did I actually expect? This random off from a catering shift. Anyway.
Well, you expect more
babes,
than that.
A normal human interaction.
To be fair, you were, you should have been getting paid for that babysitting. If you're going to be nannying like that, you should be getting paid. Don't do that shit for free.
Yeah. Oh, it was actually a really horrible day. And I went really inside myself. Like, we weren't chatting at all. And I was like, oh my God. You know, it wasn't pleasant. Anyway, then we actually went out for a drink. And after a glass of wine, I was like, do you know what? I'm going to make the most of this experience. I came here to get
when
some...
When in Norwich.
When in Norwich, baby. Yeah.
Famously, as they say.
I was like, I want to sleep with someone. I want to, like, have some sex, even though this is the most... whatever.
You did not
like,
come to Norwich to be celibate,
no,
I'm sure.
Despite all the churches, it's not what I wanted to practice.
I came for the churches and no sex. That's why I'm here. Gobbled
streets. Churches were foreplay.
Exactly.
So you get
oh,
some good
God,
stuff.
It really is quite tragic looking back on it. so I was like, after a couple of glasses of wine, you know, I started entertaining myself. I was like pulling out all the jokes. I was making it a funny
monologuing
evening.
One woman show.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything. Yeah,
Exactly. It was literally like sketches, like,
you know, pulling out costumes.
I was keeping.
I don't want my contemporary dance.
Puppets.
Yeah, puppets, magic.
Magic.
Little dance.
Doing magic tricks. Going around the pub just doing magic tricks for every table, trying to get some money, make a profit.
Fuck me. Oh, it is absolutely
my
tragic,
next
isn't
trick.
It?
I feel like I like did this last week.
Anyway, so it only goes downhill from here.
Oh, God.
And plus, there were moments of fun.
Yeah.
There were moments of fun. Anyway, then we're walking back to his, and I'm thinking, okay, this isn't going to be marriage material. Let's just have a nice bang and then go out with a bang. Like, see you on his future again. So we got back to his, and we're getting with each other. And then we basically went down with it, started getting on.
Getting jiggy.
And I was like, I'm like feeling absolutely numb. Like, it was really weird. I was like, clearly my body was being like,
you
this
start
is...
singing numb.
I've become so numb. No, but I was like, this is clearly my body being like, this isn't right. This isn't a good guy. Like, something's not right here.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, we get like 30 seconds in. And then anyway, I look down. Oh dear. I've come on my period. Now, this isn't the worst thing in the world, but when you're facing Mr. Mute over here, 19-year-old Mute.
Probably doesn't even know what period is.
No, probably doesn't even know what it is. It was absolutely horrendous. And I was like, oh God. Of course, I was really apologetic. I was like, I'm so sorry. He basically springs off the bed, uses the mattress as a spring, and like catapults himself off the bed, sprints upstairs and has a shower.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I'm just lying there like,
oh my God.
I'm lying there like in the fetal position, like, oh my God, this is awful. This is so awful.
I love you. And I'm so sorry that old prick ever existed.
What a little troll.
I hate him. Anyway, so then he comes back down the stairs and he was like, it kind of like got everywhere.
What the fuck?
And I was like, I'm really sorry. Like, I was being really apologetic, which is totally ludicrous, like, looking back on it. But I was made to feel really ashamed.
Yeah, but that's what
really
you do in those moments.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really not the end of the world.
Everywhere? Where?
Yeah, exactly.
What, like, on your body?
Up the walls, like, on the ceiling, for God's sake.
This isn't a scene out of Psycho.
It's in the front garden.
He's going to have to wash every item of clothing he owns.
Like, what are you talking about?
He was
under
his pits, he was scrubbing away, he was everywhere.
Under his toenails.
God. Yeah, it really wasn't that much of a big deal. Thankfully, I'd just done a one-woman show, actually, and I had a massive pack of, like, clothes. So I had loads of spare clothes. Oh, yeah, by the way, no tampons. I'd come on a week early, so I had no tampons. And I was like, oh God.
No.
So I had to do, like, a big nappy of tissues, and I put these, like, tight black shorts on. I had about 5 layers on. I was, like, ready to ascend Mount Everest with how warm I was. I was like Michelin man in bed, just in case period got on his mattress. Anyway, he basically turned over and it was like ready for lights out. I was basically sobbing into my pillow like, this is so awful. Anyway, so we wake up in the morning. This is coming to an end now, but wake up in the morning and I go to the toilet and I'd basically... Mother Nature had decided to give me the heaviest periods of all periods.
Oh, no.
I'd literally gone through my pair of pants, my pair of black shorts, and leaked into my pyjama bottoms.
No.
And I was like, you have to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. So I was like stripping. It was like a doctor. It was like a surgery in there. I was like stripping all these clothes. Whilst doing so, I was grabbing the tissue, getting blood all over the tissue. I was like, oh my God, this is so stressful. Like, I was holding up pieces of clothing, but then I didn't have any spare clothing in the toilet because I didn't know how bad it was going to be. I had to put on the clothing, get the spare clothes from my bag, return to the toilet. All the while, I had about 15 minutes till my trusty bus arrived again.
Oh my God, and you're like, I'm not fucking missing that bus.
So I had to catch this bus, otherwise I'd be stuck in Norwich with this horrible boy. So I'm in this toilet having in an absolute panic and I'm thinking, oh my God. What I did, I sneaked into his flatmate's bedroom, who had tampons, managed to find a tampon, but she was downstairs. So it was like a sprint into there, like searching around frantically, like, oh my God, managed to find a tampon. Oh, yes. Yes, so sorry. I managed to find a tampon early in the morning. So this was, I woke up at like 5. So before I had to get the bus, I managed to change my tampon. But I put the tampon in the toilet, went to flush it. Of course, it didn't work.
No.
So I'm frantically pushing the flush button down, like, oh my God, I've got 15 minutes, so I have to go get this coach. But whilst I'm doing so, the chain and the toilet is pumping the blood out of the tampon. It looks like someone's been murdered in the toilet. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the worst trip of my life. The whole that toilet is, was like, you can swear on red.
You know, my life.
And I was like, I have to leave in 15 minutes. I can't just depart with this red toilet.
But you could have.
Oh, babes.
Because he's a
you could have.
Piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, and I could
have. Regardless, it's not embarrassing. It's fucking life.
I know, but imagine all of these things leading up to it.
Oh, yeah, no, no. Awful.
Why has this happened?
I'd cry.
I have a similar story with a poo.
Yes, you do. It's my favourite story.
That's a good one, that. next time.
But anyway, yeah, I probably stayed in there for about 6 minutes, frantically flushing away. And in the end, it managed to go down. Oh, my God. Wait, just sorry. One more detail. Yeah, the tampon wouldn't go down. So I had to put it in a toothpaste box. This has just come back to me. A toothpaste box. Wrap it up in tissue paper. Put it in a toothpaste box and then put it at the bottom of the bin.
Like, so you fished it out.
I fished it out of the toilet.
Bare hands or...
Oh, bare hands. At this point, who cares? I put my mouth in there and get it in my teeth. Like, I was like, who cares anymore? Yeah, it was just, I was like, how many things could possibly go wrong with this trip? This was supposed to be a fun getaway from the hell of working as a caterer when I'm supposed to be acting. Yeah, and then it finally, the bloody water flushed away, like the Red Sea, into the drain. And then I departed from his house and had a 3-hour coach journey of pure self-loathing.
Oh, baby. The only person who should have been self-loathing was that silly little child.
What a freak. What an absolute freak.
He's a man-child.
He was 19. Like, what? I don't really know what I was expecting. Like, Mr. Darcy awaiting me. Like, it was just...
Yeah. You never know.
It was bad.
We were like 15, when we were 19. Right?
Why the fuck would he invite someone and then not speak to them though? It's so weird.
It was bizarre. And also, I do think, like, when we met, I was 18. I never would have behaved like that.
No.
Yeah, we had basic manners.
Yeah. I am very sorry that that happened to you, but anecdotally, you won't know it's gone that
I know. It's kind of genius.
It is so genius.
And of course, he got the fairy liquid and slip and slid it back into my DMs about 4 months later.
Are you fucking joking?
No.
Yeah, like replying to a story that I put up, like with love heart eyes, you know, the classic. And I was like, do you realise how disgusting God. You behaved once I'd like exited the whole...
Did you say?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, he was like, I'm sorry, well done, you know, mate. I just had a lot on my plate.
Fuck off.
I've What's got on loads on my plate. Don't start acting like a freak. Got a roast dinner on my plate.
To my home and then not speak to you.
Roast dinner.
Exactly.
A full Sunday roast. Carvery.
I've got a Christmas dinner on my plate. Constantly. Not problems.
And I've got all the fucking trimmings. So fuck you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God. Such a good story.
Yeah.
Such a good story. And also how you get a phenomenal sense of humour, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are right.
Yeah,
and so also no one should ever have to say sorry if they've come on their period.
Don't say sorry. 'Tis only natural.
Never apologise.
Yes.
Or like give someone a knighthood because they've been like, you know what, it's okay, and you're like, oh, how sweet. It's really the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Like pull out your sword, and a man does the bare minimum. Get on your knees.
Thank you.
But thank you, guys.
Thank you for coming on, Fenella. Links for all of our resources are in the show notes. Please do check them out.
Next week, we're going from The Mother of Angola to everyone's problematic fave cult classic, Mean Girls.
In the meantime, you can help us by rating us and following the F-Boy podcast wherever you're listening.
We would. You can find even more fuckboyery on Instagram and Twitter at FBoyPodcast.
And if you have your very own F-boy or F-girl story, don't be shy. Be sure to send them to our submissions at our website, www.fboypodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And a huge special thanks to our brilliant producers at Audio Boom Studios.
And please, if you can go on iTunes and rate, review and follow us, that would be amazing. We'd really appreciate it.
It really helps. Yeah. Yeah,
it really makes all the difference. So, watch out, Regina, Katie and Aaron.
We're coming for you.